Talk is an extension of the long-running award-winning movie review show It's Movie Time, which airs Friday at 3:01 and 8:01 p.m. on WCBE 90.5 FM, Columbus, Ohio. Hosted by John DeSando, this podcast version features additional content and banter with guests.
I'm John DeSando.
And I'm Kevin Carr.
And this is Back Talk.
That's right. Are you ready to banter?
I am. And boy, what better film to banter about than F9, The Fast Saga.
Yeah.
Now, for those who are completely out of it, this is Fast and Furious. It's 9th iteration, and it could have been 10.
It's the 10th movie if you want to count Hobbs and Shaw.
Yes,
so now we're getting into that spinoff potential. You know, and so then the numbers get even more complicated.
I mean, Kevin, can you somehow summarize? And this is a question I wouldn't ask Wayne. I really shouldn't ask you. Can you take all 9 and compress them? You know, who are these people? How does this make it?
Well, they've changed over the years. I mean, they really have, and that's the thing is I would say if there's a tipping point, it's between 4 and 5, which was. For those who don't know how they were named,
good Lord, Kevin.
It was Fast and Furious, and then going to Fast 5. Because the first movie was actually based on a true life story. It's based on an article that ran in like Rolling Stone or LA or something like that, about people street racing. And in the story, they were boosting VCRs and, you know, running red lights and just generally being an annoyance to the cops. And now it's turned into these insane, and I said on the show, it's not just James Bond, it's Austin Powers at this point.
Sure.
But so they had the first movie, and it did well, and then they did a sequel, which doesn't even have Vin Diesel in it, because it was Paul Walker going down to Florida. And then the third movie goes literally out of the country to Tokyo for Tokyo Drift. But those first three movies were just street racing movies, is the best way to describe it.
Yeah, but Kev... It's to me, when I think of Fast and Furious, I think of Vin Diesel.
Well, and that they brought him back in the fourth one.
Yeah.
And that was actually, I think they remember they said original parts was their, you know, it was kind of making a point. And that one's sort of a bridge movie because it still has the feel of it, but they start doing a bigger mission. And it's tiny compared to what they do now. But that fourth movie did extremely well. And then when they did the fifth movie, they went full James Bond. And they went that they're doing international things. They're robbing a bank and they're towing a... That's when they were like towing a vault behind themselves through the streets of like Rio de Janeiro or something like that. And then it goes into full-blown James Bond mode where the stunts are insane.
Right.
Like in the seventh movie, they like jump from like one building to the next... through the windows, which doesn't make any sense.
But Kevin, in F9, could anything be more absurd than when they drive the car off the cliff, it gets hooked and sent somewhere to the other side?
Yeah. Yes, it does get more ridiculous because they go to space in a car.
Oh, that's
right. In a car. They're like going there and they're buying, they're getting this stuff and they're like retrofitting it. I'm like, at this point, just buy a spaceship.
They have a Pontiac Fiero?
I don't know the
name. Yeah, I think it is.
Models,
right. That's in orbit.
Yeah, and they're like putting duct tape on their suits and stuff like that. It's absurd. It's ridiculous. It makes no sense. But at this point, now, if they would have done that in like the third or fourth movie, I think they would have lost the audience.
Ah.
Because they had to change it. It had to kind of go through this path of becoming this insane over the top thing. So once, I think it was really the fifth movie that they started doing crazy stuff, and then they were defying physics, and then now they're just mocking physics and saying you don't exist, you know. So, it's gone to the giant action movie. It's when you say giant action movie, that's what it is. It's these giant action scenes. It's got characters that people love. I'm not a huge fan of the series, but I respect how it's been built. And I think, you know, Justin Lin deserves a huge credit for that because he directed a bunch of them that took it in that direction. And Vin Diesel, I love his passion. I love the fact that he loves making these movies. And I'll still watch them.
I think, as he's been pointed out, he's been kind of grooming himself as a god in this movie.
Yeah.
That is, that he's stoic, he's saturnine, he gives forth... with little bon mots about family,
yeah.
And he kind of just stands there and does it, and he's revered, And he's got Michelle Rodriguez there to help him.
Yeah.
And I think she's a good choice.
Well, and she goes back. Did she go back to the first one? I think she might. Yeah. I can't remember exactly.
Yeah.
Who's involved, but. And then if somebody leaves the franchise, they bring them back. But, I mean, they also have been adding people. Kurt Russell, Helen Mirren.
Yes.
Is showing up in these things. Now you got John Cena in the mix.
Yes.
And really, honestly, these movies don't make sense, but don't try to make sense. One of the things that makes them work on an international level is it's sort of the same reason why the Transformers movies, although those are garbage, but the reason the Transformers movies transcend international barriers is you don't need to understand the plot. You're just there for the spectacle. So you don't need to even, it doesn't even need to be in your own home language. you could open a movie like this in the Middle Kingdom, and whether you speak Cantonese or Mandarin or any other dialect, you can just watch the giant 25-minute action sequences and kind of guess what they're doing.
Oh, yeah. And if you're with my friends, and particularly with Wayne, and there's nobody else in the audience, oop, that's sad, but nobody else in the audience, we can yell and scream and talk to each other and just have a good old time on a big screen and a Dolby sound.
Yeah.
This is a wonderful thing. And, Kev, you can bring in Oscar winners for cameos.
Yeah.
So Charlize can show up. And she's playing some kind of she's super in there. Hacker.
Well, she was the bad guy in the last one, I believe.
right. And I think you might have mentioned Helen Mirren.
Helen Mirren, yep.
Yeah, who does a wonderful little turn.
Yeah.
With a Cockney accent.
Well, yeah, because she was in, I forget who she is. Isn't she the mother of Jason Statham's character?
Yes, correct. Exactly. I think Danker, yes.
Because she shows up in the Hobbs and Shaw movie.
Yeah.
And, it's one of those things. A lot of people question whether they could continue doing this without Paul Walker, because when he died, I think Furious 7 was the last one he was in, and they give him the send-off because obviously they weren't going to make any more movies with him, and they had filmed almost all of his scenes, so they were able to use computers and CGI stuff.
Right.
I think they got his brother as a body double for things.
Right.
But they were able to continue that with Fast and Furious 8. But what's interesting is just to watch the international box office of this thing tick up and go high. And this one, it's doing really well coming out of a pandemic.
70 million here, first week.
Just in, yeah.
Yeah.
And it would have made twice that in a quote-unquote normal time. But I think it's going to do great business in when it hits on demand. I think it's got a 45-day window.
Oh, it does.
And so, I mean, honestly, this thing's going to be available to watch at home in mid-August, and it's going to do well with DVD and Blu-ray, and it's still going to make tons and tons of money, and it's already made, $300 million overseas.
Mm, all right, yes.
But these movies were
$6 billion, I think.
$1.5 billion
total.
For the
whole series.
For the whole series.
Oh, my God.
Well, but the last couple ones have been $1.5 billion. The first movie made $300 million worldwide, and that was a hit.
All right, now tell me, Kevin, help me through this. I get annoyed at the home theme.
Yeah, well, the family.
Yes, the family thing, which I've seen in many, even superhero films, and I don't really object to it. I like the fact that people look at finding dad or getting family back together as an important, but this one hits it really hard, don't you think?
Well, they've always done that. I mean, really, the family. They hit the family again. It was when they brought Vin Diesel back in.
Yes,
because they were kind of bringing the characters back together.
Right,
and they hit that a bit in 4 and then 5, but then it became family, and I think part of the reason I think there's a lot of people who connect to this when you talk about their family thing.
Yes,
it's not just blood family. It's you got to find your people.
Good point.
And that's really what they're saying. They say family, but they're saying someone's my family just because we've been through a lot together. And I think that that's important, especially for the younger generation. There's a lot of people out there who maybe they don't have as large of a family, or they're estranged from their family for different reasons, and they find their family. And I think that's what that's the theme of these movies. And that's, I think, what they're pushing on.
Yeah, and Diesel is a producer of this.
Oh, yeah.
And so you can feel his presence in there.
Yeah. I'd be very curious if he were to ever leave the franchise
Yes.
Because he did once, but he just did the first movie.
Yeah.
I think there may have been a cameo in the second, or I think it was a cameo of him in the third movie.
Yeah. Wow. Can you imagine how wealthy he must be with this? I mean, riches increases. My good Lord.
He has, like I said, I'm not. I don't necessarily share his tastes, but he has these franchises that he likes to do. The Riddick franchise is another one that he does, and he loves doing the Riddick stuff. And the Riddick movies are marginally okay.
Okay.
But I love the fact that he embraces them. Huh. And he will do them himself, and he's got such a fan base. I don't know if you could crowdfund a movie like this, but he'll probably crowdfund his next Riddick movie.
Boy, my gosh. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. As you look at all these set pieces, and that's really what it is. It's mm-hmm. like a mosaic of all set pieces. The one initially in the jungle, Kevin, this is amazing. They're driving these vehicles, cars, through the jungle. And there are all kinds of bombs going on around mm-hmm. them. And this is the height of absurdity.
Oh, it's ridiculous. Because you have these sports cars that, you know, if they hit a bump too hard in the regular road, it's bad for them. But here, they're going over to unpaved areas, driving over trees and shrubs and landmines. And you know, honestly, you know, a Firebird is not the best vehicle to use in the jungle or whatever. They're
or Chargers, don't they have Dodge Chargers?
I don't know. Yeah,
I mean, I don't either. I don't.
Well, I know. Like the other franchise he's big into is the XXX franchise, where he has the GTO, and I think.
Oh, okay.
You know, but you're right. They land on these things. Like there's the home where they live, but it got blown up, I think, in the seventh movie, and they're still building it in this one. So the timeline doesn't make sense, but they put these sense memory elements to it. They always have the barbecue at some point in these movies, and you feel like you're being welcomed to their barbecue.
The New York Times on Saturday
uh-huh.
did a full page on all the characters.
Oh, my gosh.
This is I have to give this to Wayne because he loves this, but this is a delineation of all the important characters. I wondered if there's any that we missed.
Let's see. I mean, well, there's a bunch of them, you know, like, you know.
Now, you mentioned Hong. Is it? What's
Hong?
It?
Han, yeah.
Han.
Yeah, he got killed in the second movie. Well, because that's what, or the third movie. He gets killed in the third movie. And then when they did the other films, they all took place before. Like, what's really interesting, look up the chronology. Because the order in which they happen is out of order. Because, like, 5 and 6 and 7 all take place before the third movie. And then they wrap them all up together later on. It's crazy. But I mean, this is a huge...
You mentioned the two guys in space.
Yes.
Let's talk about them just a little bit, because I think they are worth noting.
Well, Tyrese Gibson is the main comic relief in this movie. And I honestly, off the top of my head, aside from just random roles in movies like Stealth from 2005 or whatever, I don't know what he's famous for. Okay. But he's latched onto this franchise smartly and won't let it go. And people love him in this movie, these movies. And what he does is he kind of becomes self-aware in this with how ridiculous this is. And then isn't it Ludacris who's
yes,
also
exactly
who's his sort of sidekick?
Yes.
And they're in space together, taping up their suits with duct tape because. It was my son who said this to me. He goes, you know, they consulted NASA when they made this movie. And I'm like, well, they consulted them. And NASA probably said, well, this is nonsense. Just because you consulted them doesn't mean they said, yes, this is possible.
What about Letty? Did we mention Michelle?
Yes, you mentioned Michelle Rodriguez. You're a big fan of Michelle Rodriguez.
Yeah, I am. And I thought she did well. Talk a little bit about John Cena, is it?
Yeah, John Cena. Well, because he's... They always have to have a bad guy, and he's the bad guy.
Yeah,
and they're always bringing in big actors because you know John Cena is trying to do what The Rock did, what Arnold Schwarzenegger did, and become the friendly actor too. And he's actually doing a really good job at it. You know, he's becoming a warm and fuzzy actor, and he's still you know of course big and strong.
Yeah, yeah.
But he plays the bad guy. He's Don's brother, and. It's a murky relationship that doesn't make a whole lot of sense because we've never heard of him before.
Right, right.
And of course, they flash back to when they were younger, way back to the sepia-toned days of 1989. That hurt a little bit. that they were making that look like, oh, back
I know,
day, before
right?
we had color film. You know, but
and his turn of character always, yeah, along with the absurdity of the movie itself.
Yeah. Well, they do this. It's sort of the soap opera effect.
Yes.
Because not only do you have characters that can die and come back, which they do on soap operas all the time. for the few that still exist, but anytime you have a bad guy in a soap opera, eventually they become such a fan favorite that they need to become a good guy. And that's what happened with Jason Statham in this.
Yes, oh yeah.
I mean, he was a bad guy. Even like, was Luke Evans plays the bad guy, I think, in the fifth or sixth movie. And he comes back and is a good guy in, I think, the last one. So just because you're playing a bad guy doesn't mean you're going to always be a bad guy. And you will never die. And even if you do, I imagine Gal Gadot's going to come back at some point.
Oh yes, she's only briefly in this.
They flash back, and they wouldn't have done that had she not been Wonder Woman. They killed her in the series, and then they're like, oh crap, she got cast in a huge franchise.
Yeah.
Because you never actually see her die on screen. Okay. She falls out of the when the plane's on the runway that goes 186 miles in one. I think it's the sixth one. And they six or seven, and she lets go, and she ends up on the runway. And I'm like, well, I mean, if Han can be blown up in a car and set on fire, she could tuck and roll.
Well, Kevin, I'm not sure we've made a lot of sense out of this movie.
I don't think
because there isn't any, right? Because there isn't any sense. But is there? You've got people sitting out there waiting for Black Widow to come. You know, we know where we're anticipating. We don't know. We're before the Tomorrow War comes out, so we don't have any idea what that's going to be. But there's not a whole lot to look forward to. And so, therefore, what do we say to our audience now who are looking to get out? Is this the one to pull them out, do you think?
Well, I mean, it pulled a lot of people out. 70 million is nothing to sneeze at. I think a lot of people, if you want to just talk about the pandemic, and I don't want to say post-pandemic because it's still going on.
Yes, it is.
Get your vaccinations, public service announcement. But the thing is, people have been conditioned for more than a year that they can watch a lot of stuff online, and the online retailers are not going to just give that up.
Yep, right.
So there's even stiffer competition for your home watching. But you've got some big tentpole stuff over there. You don't have as many as you used to have. And there was a little bit of a hiccup within the Heights because that was not the big hit they expected. Hitman's Bodyguard wasn't a big hit, or the Hitman's Wife's Bodyguard.
Right.
But you got Black Widow coming up. I think Black Widow is going to be big. You got the Suicide Squad coming up at the beginning of August. I think you're going to see bigger movies coming out later. Like you got Candyman coming out, I think, September. So you're seeing what would have been anticipated movies peppering through the end of the summer and into the fall. Well, it's going to be a different fall.
Kevin, I hear our audience yelling, what about James Bond?
Isn't that still scheduled for October?
Yes. So you got to don't wait around for that. I mean, that's months away.
When that happens, go see it because God knows. I mean, James Bond, No Time to Die, I think is the only Bond movie for the Grammy to win to be. Or did Billie Eilish win a Grammy? Whether she won or was nominated for a Grammy,
nominated at least,
was a year before it comes out.
Came out. I know. It is great. So my advice is to take a chance. Go out and see this, even if you think it is ridiculous. We're here to tell you it is ridiculous.
It's stupid, but that's okay.
And it's so much fun. It's what Hollywood does well when it doesn't take itself seriously. It is beautiful, big screen, great sound, really fun escapism. I think is the word that you use when we talk. This is truly escapism.
I don't think it's as over the top and ridiculous and fun as like 7 and 8, but it's still worth seeing.
All right.
It still fits in that mold. And it's ridiculous.
F9:
The Fast Saga.
Thank you.